70 years with KBS World Radio, 70 years of Global Korea. Throughout the year, we celebrate the 70th anniversary of KBS World Radio with the voices of our listeners from all over the world.
Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi
wabarakatuh. Hello, I'm Samar Said from Egypt. Congratulations to all of you for the 70 years of outstanding service. I found KBS World Radio's Arabic service in 2004 when I was 24 years old. Back then, the drama Winter Sonata was immensely popular in Egypt, and I stumbled upon the KBS World Radio website, which had a special section dedicated to the drama. The first program I tuned into was Hull Calling, and I remember being surprised at how fluent the Korean speaker's Arabic was. The most beautiful memory I have of the channel is my visit to Korea on the invitation of KBS. I met the Arabic service staff and Super Junior, my favorite K-pop band. My heart still flutters just thinking about that day. I didn't know much about Korean culture and its people before KBS World Radio, but it completely changed my perspective. I find myself wanting to visit Korea and see the places mentioned on the radio and experience what was introduced on the channel more and more. KBS 너무 사랑해.
KBS. 70 years with KBS World Radio, 70 years of Global Korea. KBS World Radio brings Korea to you wherever you are.
Hello, it's Thursday, the 30th of March, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. The presidential office has denied reports that Seoul may resume imports of seafood products from Japan's Fukushima region despite Tokyo's request. We'll have more details in news briefing shortly. North Korea revealed its tactical nuclear warhead for the first time this week, as well as details about new delivery mechanisms. We'll examine what they tell us about the regime's nuclear capabilities for our in-depth today. And coming up for Explore Korea, we find out the best places around the country to see cherry blossoms and other spring flowers. Let's begin Korea 24. The nation's top office has flatly denied reports that South Korea may resume imports of seafood products from Japan's Fukushima region, saying that public health and safety remain the government's utmost priority. The statement comes after reports that Tokyo made such requests during the recent summit between President Yoon Suk-yeol and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida in Tokyo. Our KBS World Radio news editor, Gu Hee-jin, joins us in the studio now to brief us on this, as well as our other headlines of the day. Hee-jin, hello.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So these reports have been made by Japanese media outlets in the aftermath of the bilateral summit last week. So what did Seoul's presidential office say today?
Well, a notice issued by the office of the presidential spokesperson on Thursday stated that seafood products from Fukushima will never be brought into the country. Moreover, an official at the top office said the government will never make a decision that endangers the health and safety of the people. The official, who declined to be identified, said that the Fukushima water and South Korean resumption of Japanese seafood imports are related issues, stressing there needs to be substantiated evidence of the safety of the seafood, and the Korean people must be able to accept it emotionally. Earlier, Kyodo News said President Yoon, during his meeting with former Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, promised to seek understanding from the South Korean people regarding Tokyo's planned release of radioactive water from the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant into the ocean. Kyodo also said Fukushiro Nukaga, the former head of the Japan-Korea Parliamentarian Union, had sought Seoul's understanding for the water release and called for the withdrawal of the import ban.
Yes, these reports have continued to add pressure on President Yoon, with his opponents already having criticized him for giving too many concessions to Tokyo last week. But the presidential office seems to be looking to draw a line under this issue now. Meanwhile, another top story is the repercussions from the shakeup in the president's national security and diplomatic personnel. The foreign ministry said on Thursday that there will be no mishaps in relation to President Yoon's planned state visit to the US, as the government has closely coordinated with Washington for a significant period of time regarding the visit. So what's the latest here?
Well, a foreign ministry official who declined to be identified told reporters that the South Korean embassy in the US is a rather large diplomatic mission and maintains cooperative relationships with the US State Department, as well as the White House and other related organizations. First Vice Minister, Foreign Minister Cho Hyun-dong, who was nominated as the new ambassador to the US, will reportedly continue his current duties until he receives agrément or a consent from the US government, which usually takes about 4 to 6 weeks after receiving the request. President Yoon Suk-yeol moved quickly to fill the seat of his national security adviser following Kim Song-han's abrupt resignation amid speculation of planning faux pas involved in the upcoming state visit to the US. Current ambassador to Washington Cho Tae-yong will take up the role.
Yes, and the speculation about Kim's departure has continued to grow as well, Heejin.
Indeed. Kim stepped down following media reports citing sources within the ruling camp speculating about blunders with Washington in the process of fine-tuning details of President Yoon's visit to the US that caused possible snags in preparations. His resignation also came in the wake of a much-criticised South Korea-Japan summit, with pundits accusing the president of making excessive concessions. Previously, the top office replaced a presidential foreign affairs aide as well as a presidential protocol secretary ahead of the Washington summit amid reports of critical issues arising from the preparatory discussions.
Yeah, so again, more pressure on President Yoon as he prepares for that state visit to the US next month. Mm-hmm. Turning to other headlines, President Yoon has called for solidarity among democratic states as the democracy that has led to freedom and prosperity faces a significant challenge. These comments were made during the Summit for Democracy. Can you tell us more?
Well, the president made the remarks on Wednesday during that summit, which he is co-hosting along with the leaders of the US, Costa Rica, the Netherlands and Zambia. President Yoon warned that in addition to the formation of blocs by authoritarian forces that deny rules-based international order, fake democracy represented by anti-intellectualism is emerging worldwide. The president called for a new journey to revise democracy through innovation and solidarity, expressing hope that the summit will serve as an opportunity to enhance joint efforts by the international community towards freedom and democracy.
Meanwhile, the Unification Ministry has released a report on human rights in North Korea, a first such report by the ministry. Based on first-hand accounts from North Korean defectors, the report said killings by authorities and public executions are still rampant throughout the regime, claiming the lives of victims in widely disparate situations. So tell us more about this report.
Yes, the South Korean government's latest report on the state of human rights in North Korea has found that killings by state authorities and public executions remain prevalent. According to the Unification Ministry's annual report based on testimonies from 508 North Korean defectors on Thursday, summary executions were carried out across the country against victims from a range of backgrounds and situations. The report included an account of the killing of a labourer who was shot to death as he attempted to cross into China after being caught for theft during a smuggling operation near the north's border with China in 2019. And there are also other accounts, and a full report will officially be released on Friday in a first of its kind for the Unification Ministry, which spearheads the government's policy of engagement with the north.
In other news, the chairman of the US Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, said the consumption of ammunition would be, quote-unquote, off the charts should a war break out on the Korean Peninsula or between the US and Russia or China. So can you give us more context on this statement?
Well, as a session of the U.S. House Armed Service Committee on Wednesday, Milley said the biggest lesson learned from the ongoing war in Ukraine is the massive amount of conventional munitions used during a restricted regional conflict. According to the Pentagon, the U.S. has provided over 111 million rounds of ammunition for small arms to Ukraine, while over 2 million mortar shells have been sent by a total of 54 countries, including the U.S. Milley said the U.S. military is ensuring that there are stockpiles in place for a contingency and is investing in production. Asked about the need for a third missile defense system along the East Coast in the state of New York to better defend the mainland, Milley said he believes there is a strategic value considering missile threats coming out of North Korea.
And finally, a former special prosecutor who led the investigation into the influence peddling scandal of the former President Park Geun-hye administration was the target of a raid by the prosecution over alleged involvement in the Daejangdong land development scandal. Can you tell us more?
Well, the Seoul Central District Prosecutor's Office on Thursday sent investigators to the offices and residences of Park Yong-soo and his former aide lawyer Yang Jae-sik to obtain documents and bank transactions on charges of violating the law on aggravated punishment of specific economic crimes. Park is accused of assisting Kim Man-bae, the biggest shareholder of an asset management firm at the centre of the scandal, establish a consortium to win the development project while serving as the chair of Uribank's board of directors in 2014. He allegedly received a promise of 5 billion won from Kim in return for his assistance. Park's daughter earned 1.1 billion won while working at Kim's firm between September 2019 and February 2021, while also purportedly reaping 800 million won in profits from buying an apartment in an allotment sale. The so-called 5 billion won club includes seven individuals, including Park and former Supreme Court Justice Kwon Soon-il, to whom Kim had allegedly promised a share of the profits from the Daejangdong project as bribes for various favours.
That's all for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
North Korea has unveiled photos of tactical nuclear warheads for the first time in what may be a prelude to a seventh nuclear test. The photos were carried in the regime's state media reports earlier this week, which also claimed that a pair of ballistic missiles were fired from the capital of Pyongyang before detonating 500 meters above a target island. Last week, Pyongyang also claimed that it conducted another test of a nuclear-capable underwater weapon system. However, South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff expressed doubt over the report, saying the claims were exaggerated or even fabricated entirely. To delve into North Korea's claims about its newly developed weapons, we have joining us on the line now Bruce Bechtel, a professor of political science at Angelo State University and a former intelligence officer at the US Defense Intelligence Agency. Hello, and thank you for your time today.
Hello, it's great to be with you again. I hope you've been well.
Yes, thank you for those kind words. Let's get into this topic then. There have been quite a few claims in recent weeks from North Korea, and we'll try to get through them one by one. Let's start with talking about some of the various types of delivery mechanisms that were revealed first before we talk about that warhead. It was reported that the North fired a pair of ballistic missiles and detonated them hundreds of meters above a specific target. So just to clarify, these were tests and they did not have nuclear warheads on them. Can you explain a bit more for us about this technology and why it may be significant?
Well, for the North Koreans, it would be new technology. It's certainly not new technology for the Chinese or the Russians or us or the British or the French or a lot of other people who have ballistic missile capability. One of the things that it does is it gives you a more distinct area a more tactical area, if you will, to be able to detonate the nuclear weapon. It still kills a lot of people.
Hmm.
You know, I don't believe this is tied into what, you know, there has been a big talk lately, which is electromagnetic pulse detonation of a nuclear weapon, which is designed to disrupt the electrical systems of the region that it's detonated above. And I would think that, because it was 500 meters according to KCNA, so I would think that 500 meters would be too low to conduct an act like that. But that's one of the possibilities that is there for a weapon of that kind. And like the underwater test you were talking about, the Iraq Ministry of National Defense did not seem to think that that's actually what happened. In other words, what the North Koreans said happened. That doesn't mean they're not working toward that technology. And if they are, it's certainly in addition to the threat that they pose to ROK and U.S. forces and the Japanese in the region.
Right. And when we say electromagnetic pulse, we also simply known as EMP as well, I understand. Let's talk a bit more about that underwater nuclear attack drone. So Pyongyang said it conducted a test of the so-called Hail 1 type drone, and that it targeted, a jagged and oval 600 kilometer course in the East Sea for almost 60 hours before setting off a test warhead in waters off Hwadae County. What do you make of these claims? As you said, South Korean military has expressed doubt over these claims.
Well, it's certainly very interesting, and it certainly is a capability in theory that the Russians have with their own Poseidon system. So the possibility exists that the Russians sold or gave, more likely they sold it if they did, this system, or, you know, blueprints for the system, or assisted them in building this system. It sounds like, when they talked about the capabilities, it sounds very similar to the system the Russians have, which itself has not been tested very much. And we don't even know if that system's capable of doing what the North Koreans said. But if they do have a system that they are building, that they're trying to get to those capabilities, it's likely that they did get it from the Russians. In fact, it would be impossible for them to do it any other way. So this continues to be concerning for me personally, and I think probably for the ROK and for the U.S. as well, because it looks like the Russians continue to proliferate new technologies to the North Koreans, which is something we've seen a lot of since about 2019.
I see. And these underwater drones, what do they mean for a combat situation? What significance do they have in actual combat? How would they be used?
Well, my understanding is, good question. My understanding is that they create some type of the pulse that the explosion that the system creates actually causes this huge tidal wave effect that can wash over, for example, a large fleet such as the carrier task force, for example, that the U.S. is just brought over for those big exercises that they did with the Iraq Navy and the Iraq Marine Corps, that kind of thing. They're also, that system, now we're talking about the Russian Poseidon system, that system is also supposed to be able to create this big tsunami that would wash over coastal cities, like what we've seen in the past in Indonesia. Remember when that happened a few years ago? They're supposed to be able to artificially create that kind of effect. Now, this is a system, the only country I know of that has it is the Russians. And everything that it's supposed to be able to do is in theory.
Right.
We haven't seen the Russians actually do it. So, you know, it's good that the ROK, Ministry of National Defense, is being very cautious about actually saying that this is a capability. On the other hand, it shows something that I think is important for the ROK even more than the U.S., and that is they really need to focus on developing their anti-submarine warfare capability. You know, we saw what happened with the Chonan in 2010, where a very primitive small submarine was able to, you know, sneak through muddy waters and bad tides and sink a far more modern rock corvette and killed half the crew. Now we see they're at least talking about doing this. We've seen submarines that are shooting MRBMs. So when we're seeing these things, it shows that the North Koreans are developing their underwater threat, their submarine threat, if you will, which obviously means that the ROK Navy has to develop its anti-submarine warfare to a much more modern degree.
Just one more question I have about the underwater drones before we move on very briefly. So in theory, if they work the way they're supposed to, how effective would they be against, for example, a U.S. aircraft carrier? I ask because right now, well, in recent days, there have been joint military exercises between South Korea and the U.S. involving the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier group.
I know, and again, another good question. Every time you interview me, you ask me great questions, by the way. But in 1989, when I was on the USS Tarawa as a Marine, I was actually in a carrier task force sailing through the Pacific, and we did a big exercise with the ROK Navy. It is an unbelievable sight. It's a huge amount of ships. And, you know, covers dozens and dozens of, you know, miles. And when you look at something like that from overhead and realize how big it is, a tsunami-type, I would almost call it a weather attack, you know, what it would do, that could be disastrous. Because, you know, ships could be susceptible to something like that if it was a legitimate threat. Although, I need to stress, this is all in theory. We don't know that it works the way it's supposed to work. But if it did work the way that it's been described as working in theory, that would be quite a legitimate threat to U.S. naval shipping and to ROK shipping. Now, I think it's something else that's important that I need to point out here. Anti-submarine warfare for the U.S. Navy is a big deal. So it's unlikely that something like that, a submarine that would release something like that, or even a drone that could get close, is going to get real close to a carrier task force. American anti-submarine warfare is the best in the world. So it's a concern. The Americans are going to look at this, obviously.
Sure.
Hopefully they're going to share go ahead.
Okay, well, let's now talk about the tactical nuclear warheads. North Korean state-run media released photos of what they said are tactical nuclear warheads on Tuesday. It reported that leader Kim Jong-un inspected the warheads called Hwasan-31. Have you seen those pictures as well? I mean, obviously, there's only so much you can tell from photos, but what was your impression after seeing those photos?
Well, they could be real. They could be mock-ups. We know that the North Koreans have done that before. In fact, remember the big round thing years ago that Kim Jong-un posed with that was supposed to be a warhead for a missile? I don't know if you remember that picture or not. That was quite ominous. But they look like they could be real. If so, then they would be legitimate. You know, when I got the pre-questions from your producer, she asked me, does North Korea have the capability of miniaturizing nuclear weapons so they could fit on these missiles?
Sure.
And I think it's important to point out that the first thing North Korea had to do when they got nukes was miniaturize nuclear warheads just so they could be small enough to fit on something much bigger like a Nodong or an ICBM. Or a Hwasong 12, something like that. That in itself was a major project, doing all of those things, and I think they have done that. All of the evidence suggests that the North Koreans have done that. Have they done that even more so to be able to fit it on smaller missiles, such as what I'm guessing would be North Korea's version of the Iskander, for example, which the Russians have used a lot in the Ukraine. I don't know. Certainly, we've seen now models of that. We don't know that the North Koreans have actually done it or whether these are mock-ups. But, you know, just the fact that they put mock-ups in there, if they are mock-ups, it shows that North Korea is certainly working toward that end.
I see. So as ever, there are a lot of question marks still, but it perhaps does say something that they're confident enough to show it, at least for now. I mentioned at the start that the reveal of the tactical nuclear warheads could be signalling that the long-mooted seventh nuclear test is coming. South Korean media has been saying that because when North Korea previously unveiled what it claimed to be nuclear warheads, it led to nuclear tests within a few months at the longest and a few days at the shortest. Do you think North Korea is now going to conduct its seventh nuclear test anytime soon? And what were they look to be trying to achieve by conducting such a test?
Well, I think that would be, as the Americans say, a cherry on top of the ice cream, because what they've been doing since the U.S. and the ROK started their big joint and combined exercises was all kinds of stuff like this, right? Mm. So that would simply be the climax. The biggest thing that they had done was just to conduct a nuclear test. And let me throw something in there that your listeners may want to think about. The type of nuclear test that would make the biggest splash would be if North Korea actually put a nuclear weapon on a missile, such as an ICBM or an IRBM, and fired that missile to an empty spot in the ocean. In other words, away from American sovereign territory or anybody else, but did a demonstration showing, look, we've put a nuclear weapon on a missile, and now we're not only showing you that we can successfully detonate a nuclear weapon, but we're showing you the platform that we would use to do it. So that's one possibility that the North Koreans might want to pull off. If they did, it would be quite controversial, I think.
Indeed. So then to wrap up, looking at the latest developments from North Korean state media, how advanced do you think North Korea is in overall terms of its nuclear weapons production capabilities? And do you think South Korea and the US and its allies are sufficiently protected from these threats under the US missile defense systems?
Well, I think we can do more. And I do think we are protected. When I say we, I mean you're in Korea, so you're under more threat than I am. I'm in Texas. But, THAAD has certainly been focused on. My understanding is that these exercises have involved anti-missile and anti-nuclear capabilities, which is good. And they've also involved extended deterrence, you know, putting South Korea under the nuclear umbrella in the exercise, which is good, I think. So I think that it's good. I think it's going to get better because it has to, because I think that the North Korean threat has become exacerbated, certainly, especially over the past 5 years. Kim Jong-un appears to be intent on developing what he calls both his tactical and his strategic nuclear capability. And what that really means is short-range and long-range missiles, the shorter-range missiles to target the South and Japan, and then the ICBMs to target the United States. He appears intent on doing that and having the capability to do that with nuclear weapons. That means our ballistic missile defense has to be the very best that it can be, and we need to renew our focus on that. When I say we, I mean the United States, because two of our most important allies in the world, the ROK and Japan, are now under that growing threat.
Okay, we will leave it there for today. We've been speaking to Professor Bruce Bechtel from Angelo State University. Professor, as always, thank you for your time and your considered thoughts today.
Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great day.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index jumped 9.24 points, or 0.38% on Thursday, to close the day at 2,453.16. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 6.54 points, or 0.77%, to close at 850.48. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 3.71 against the U.S. dollar, closing the day at 1,299 won. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
We continue on to our daily segment now, Courier Trending, where we take a look at some of the other news headlines that have been trending online. And for that, we have our contributor, Diane Yu, joining us in the studio. Diane, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, Jango. It's good to see you too.
Okay, so what stories do you have for us today?
First, we'll talk about the latest effort by the Seoul Metropolitan Government to prevent digital sex crimes. Then we'll talk about shortened shopping hours for large supermarkets in South Korea. And finally, we'll close today's Korea Trending with a warning from the police to any potential pranksters ahead of April Fool's Day.
Okay, let's get into our first story then about the efforts to prevent digital sex crimes. Can you tell us more?
Mm-hmm. Great inventions are those that change our lives in better ways. And scientists have been researching how to come up with better technologies like artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And the Seoul Metropolitan Government has put AI to good use. According to the city government on Wednesday, the Seoul Digital Sex Crime Safety Support Center will, for the first time, use AI technology to improve the prevention of digital sex crimes. The center provides various support for victims of digital sex crimes, including from deleting videos to providing legal support and psychological treatment.
Okay, so could you tell us a little bit more about what this technology will do exactly?
So AI technology, which provides online 24-hour real-time monitoring, automatically detects videos related to victims on various social media platforms. It then swiftly deletes those videos and prevents redistribution. In the past, finding the victim's face was done manually by going through all the videos one by one, but now AI deep learning technology can comprehensively analyze audio, video, as well as text information and instantly find all videos related to the victim with just one click. Due to the nature of social media, it's easy to spread and share any content, and the speed of distribution is very fast. That's why speed is essential in the fight against digital sex crimes, so that a video can be deleted as soon as it's uploaded. And AI technology guarantees that. It only takes 3 minutes for AI to detect sex crimes, digital sex crimes, way faster than the current time of 1 to 2 hours.
Indeed, the longer a video is online, the more chance that it could get copied and disseminated somewhere else.
Exactly.
So speed is important. And it looks like the AI can guarantee speed. But is it accurate?
Yes. What's promising is that both accuracy and speed are expected to further improve as AI learning data accumulates. The Seoul Metropolitan Government plans to focus on preventing digital sex crimes against children and teenagers, and AI will be a big part of this mission as the number of digital sex crimes against them has been continuously increasing recently without them even knowing. Within the last year, the center has deleted over 3,000 videos, with more than half of them being crimes against children. Now with fast and accurate AI technology, hopefully digital sex crimes can be prevented.
Yes, well, hopefully it will help. Of course, more needs to be done to take down the perpetrators, those who upload the videos in the first place,
right,
especially those who use hidden cameras or mulka. So there's a long way to go, but this will be a useful new tool, it seems. Okay, let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
Well, people who love getting late-night deals in grocery stores will now have to change their shopping schedules. Large supermarkets in South Korea have decided to close 1 hour earlier. According to the retail industry Monday, the country's discount store chain E-Mart closed stores nationwide at 11 p.m., an hour earlier than usual. Another retail chain, HomePlus, adjusted the closing time of 24 stores across the country to 10 p.m.
Okay, so did they explain the reason behind their decision?
By closing 1 hour earlier, they will be able to cut maintenance fees such as electricity and gas, as well as labor costs. It's also a result of changed customer patterns. An official from the industry said that the shortening of operation hours was due to the customers shopping less at night. The proportion of customers visiting the store at night has decreased since the COVID-19 pandemic, while the number of visitors during the peak hours has increased. The official added that the operating hours will be adjusted according to the market conditions and demands in the future.
I see. I guess if there is less demand, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure initially there'll be a lot of late-night shoppers who are surprised by this change.
Yeah.
This also means that time for the late-night sales will be early as well, right?
Right. Large supermarkets are adjusting their sales strategies as well. In line with the shortened business hours, the evening discount time, which normally started at 8 p.m., was also moved 1 hour earlier to 7 p.m. Discounted products are mainly fruit products that are sold daily with short sell-by dates, including seasonal fruits, vegetables such as cucumbers and spinach, seafood, livestock products, sushi, and bread. In addition, large retailers plan to promote flash sales during the peak hours from 2 to 6 p.m. when the biggest numbers of shoppers are in store. So make sure to check the operation hours before you go grocery shopping at night and find it all locked up.
Indeed. Okay. Let's move on to our final story. What else has been trending?
This coming Saturday is April Fool's Day, an annual holiday that consists of practical jokes, pranks, and hoaxes. Funny jokes can be a great laugh for the day, but if it gets out of hand, it can get pretty ugly. And to prevent that, the Gyeongnam Provincial Police Agency in southern Gyeongsang has warned any potential pranksters that there will be serious consequences for calling the police as a joke. The Chungbuk Provincial Office Agency also announced stern measures yesterday. In particular, the police emphasized that if the call wasn't made by mistake, and if the person has a record of calling in false reports, they will file criminal charges or request a summary trial on charges of obstruction of justice or violation of the Punishment of Minor Offenses Act.
Yes, a good prankster knows what lines not to cross, and calling the police is definitely a no-no. How many false or prank reports do the police in South Gyeongsang Province say they receive?
The number of false and prank reports has been showing a decreasing trend every year, with about 290 cases in 2020, 249 cases in 2021, and it was down to less than 230 cases in 2022. However, the police are trying to root out any false or mischievous 112 reports with strict punishments to prevent the waste of law enforcement's time. In southern Gyeongsang province, three people were prosecuted for false or mischievous reports this year, with one of them being arrested, while eight other people were put on trial immediately.
Okay, and what are some consequences of false reports? And is spreading fake news also a punishable act?
Right. In the case of making a false report to the fire station or police station, a person can be punished with a fine of up to 600,000 won or detention in accordance with the Minor Offenses Act. If the intention is clear and serious damage has occurred, a more severe punishment will be imposed, including up to 5 years of imprisonment or a fine of up to 10 million won. If a person repeatedly sends fake news that causes fear or anxiety to the other party, he or she may be sentenced to up to 1 year in prison or a fine of up to 10 million won as well. So all the pranksters out there, please keep your jokes for your friends and family and do not waste law enforcement's time or resources, as there might be someone out there who really needs the help.
Yes, calling the police just for fun is not a prank. It's a crime. Okay, that's all for Korea Trending today. Thank you for those stories, Diane, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time.
It's time now to discover more about some of the cultural, historical and travel highlights that the country has to offer. It is, of course, our weekly segment Explore Korea. And for that this week, it's the turn of our travel explorer and travel guide, Hannah Roberts, who has joined us in the studio. Hannah, hello. It's great to see you.
Always happy to be here.
What do you have in store for us today?
So today I am taking us to not just one place, but a selection of them.
Okay.
And all of them are some of the famous, some of the top spots to see, the hottest and most picturesque sites of the season, which are, of course, the cherry blossoms.
Yes, so it is that time of year again then, Hannah.
Yeah, it is. The end of March and the start of April is the best time for cherry blossoms, for seeing them everywhere, all across the country. The perfect time does vary each year, of course, but this year the peak of the blooms across the country is actually supposed to be this coming weekend, going into next weekend and next week also, especially here in Seoul. However, I think people tend to forget that cherry blossoms are not the only flowers and blossoms blooming at this time of year too. So today I'm going to introduce some spots to see some of the other lesser known types of spring blooms as well. And I'm not just sticking to Seoul either. There are amazing flower spotting locations across the whole country that are too good not to share.
Indeed, yes. The cherry blossoms and other spring flowers, they've actually started to blossom around the country already. It's actually early. It was reportedly the second fastest cherry blossom bloom on record, which is actually rather a concerning sign about climate change. Yeah. But let's not get bogged down on that today. So should we start here in Seoul then and make our way south?
Yes, sure. So the most popular spots in Seoul to see the cherry blossoms are, of course, Seoul Forest, Yeouido and Seokchon Lake. So Seoul Forest is a popular spot for early spring picnics underneath the blossoms. But if you head to the far side of the park, the best view of the blossoms can be had from a raised walkway, which lets you see the Han River view as well. This year is the first time in a few years that the Yeongdeungpo Yeouido Spring Flower Festival is being held from April 4th to 9th. And, you know, that's where people can walk the cherry-lined streets of Yeouido, which is the largest island on the Han River. And you can do that both in the daytime, which is really lovely with the blue skies of spring.
Of course.
But also at nighttime, and all the trees are illuminated with colourful lights from underneath. Seokchon Lake also has a similar festival to Yeouido as well, which is running from April 5th to April 9th, with the famous Lotte Tower presenting a striking backdrop for your pink tree pictures, as well as having a bunch of photo zones alongside the cafes and restaurants that line the lake.
Right, so actually, as I said, because the flowers bloom so early this year, the festivals are probably taking place a touch late. but I think they should still be in bloom next week, and it's prettier anyway, I think, when the petals start to fall.
Oh, you get the spring snow.
Exactly. Okay, now the three sites you mentioned, they are definitely the most popular spots, right? Meaning that they can get very busy.
Yes, with these places you can expect very intense crowds, especially in the evenings and on weekends, of course. However, the Han River subsidiary streams are also lined with blossom trees and are less busy than these top spots. So the best of these, where you can see the blossoms, would be Yangjaecheon, which is a little south of Seoul in the southern area, and also Bampocheon. Some of the most well-known university campuses are also beautiful locations for cherry blossom spotting, including Ewha, Gyeonggi and Yonsei universities.
Right, so you will be able to find lots of sites around Seoul where you can enjoy the cherry blossoms. But as you said, they aren't the only flowers blooming at this time of year, of course. What other flowers can we see right now, or soon at least anyway?
So yeah, cherry blossoms do take the spotlight, really, don't they? But you can also see peach, plum and king cherry blossoms as well, as well as forsythia, magnolia, azalea and canola flowers too. So for some diversity in your flower viewing experience, I have a few other spots right now in Seoul to recommend, and then I'll get to the rest of Korea.
Sure.
So forsythia are small, beautiful yellow flowers that are currently in bloom across the country, or they're just coming into bloom right now. And the best place to see them in Seoul, without a doubt, is Eungbongsan, where they form a bright yellow carpet across the whole mountain. It's an amazing sight. Azalea flowers are also beginning to bloom, though they're not quite at their peak yet, so probably in the next couple of weeks they'll be at their best. And my personal favourite place to see them is at Dalmasa Temple, which is behind Sungsil University. And if you take the subway to Sungsil University and then walk behind the campus there, there's an absolutely beautiful cherry blossom lined road that leads to the temple there. So you get a best of both worlds.
Great. So that's Seoul. Where shall we visit in other parts of the country to catch these spring blooms?
So to make it easier to find the spots you'd like most, I'll group it by types of flower.
Okay.
Starting with the cherry blossoms, but I'll include plum and peach blossoms too. So the most popular cherry blossom festival in the whole of Korea is the Jinhae Gungangje Cherry Blossom Festival, running this year from March 24th to April 6th. You know, it has the famous sight of the train flanked in the pink and white fluffy trees, and also the blossoms that make a canopy over the nearby stream. Very famous for photos.
Sure.
Nearby Seoul in Incheon, Jayu Park, which in English we call Freedom Park, has a very impressive showcase of cherry blossoms for visitors to see alongside its panoramic view of Incheon City.
Right. So Jinhae Gudangjae is probably the most famous one, as you said.
Yes.
To catch that, I think you'll have to rush down this weekend, as said. It ends on April 6th officially. Are there any places people might not usually think of going as well?
Yes, a lesser known but equally impressive spot for cherry blossoms is Gyeongpodae Lake in Gangneung on the east coast, which has 4 kilometres worth of trees to walk underneath. So, and, you know, good exercise day for you there as well, if you want that. Or for plum blossoms, you can head down to the village of Somjin in Gwangyang City, which is right down in South Jeolla Province, close to Suncheon and Yeosu, close to the very south coast. This village in a valley, it's set in a valley. It turns beautiful shades of white and pink every year towards the end of March. So it's kind of at its peak now, actually, because it's further south.
Right.
You know, the blooming of the plum trees make that it looks like it's coated again in snow, except it's flowers. It's lovely. But you can also sample the village's own plum goods in the form of ice cream and plum wine.
Great.
Jeju also has some amazing spots for seeing cherry blossoms, but the ones on Jeju are very special. They're called king cherry blossoms. The flowers are made up of layers and layers of petals, so they're much larger than the usual cherry blossoms that you see in most places. And if you go to Jeju to see them, you need to go quickly. But the best spot to see them is around the Jeju Sports Complex in the southern city, and also at Jeju Horse Park, which is close to Hallasan, where you can see, it's actually very amazing. It's you can see the cherry blossoms and the yellow canola flowers right alongside each other, like a stripy pink and yellow snake.
Right, and as you said, it might be too late for Jeju now, as Jeju is the most southern point of the country.
Yes.
But you still might be able to enjoy the cherry blossoms this weekend if you rush.
Yeah, and the king cherry blossoms bloom a little bit later than the regular ones too. So
I see.
You can still catch those, I think.
Okay, so from your list, we can see that you can go pretty much anywhere in Korea and see the spring blossoms at this time of year, right?
Yeah, all you really have to do is walk outside wherever you're staying and you'll see some. They're everywhere, so you're never going to miss them, no matter where you are.
Indeed, catch them while you can, and hopefully the fine dust pollution also will clear up a little bit so that people can really enjoy their time outside flower spotting over the next week or so. Okay, we'll leave it there, Hannah. Thank you for those recommendations, and we'll see you again next time. Take care.
See you next time. Thank you.
Did you enjoy this segment? You can discover more segments like this throughout the week on Korea 24. On Monday, we bring you news from the world of sports around the peninsula. Then on Tuesday, notable guests from various fields join us and give us insight into their lives and work. Are you a fan of books? Then tune in on Wednesday for Korea Book Club, where our book critic helps us unpack works by Korean authors or written on Korea. Go on an adventure with us every Thursday as we take a look at Korea's hidden gems with Explore Korea. And on Friday, listen to what our film critics have to say about the latest movie releases from both home and abroad. We have all that you need, all in one place, on Korea 24.
We finish up the show as usual with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald. And Richard is not with us today. Instead, we welcome back Emily Jennings, filling in for him once again. Emily, hello. It's great to see you again.
And it's great to be back.
Yes, welcome back. Okay, so what's the first story that you have for us today?
Well, it's Kim Hae-yeon's article in the Korean Herald, about the Suncheonman International Garden Expo, and that's kicking off tomorrow.
Okay, the Suncheonman International Garden Expo. It sounds interesting. Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Well, it's been running since 2013, and the initial plan was to preserve the Suncheon Bay wetlands with the establishment of an eco-belt stretching across 116 hectares, and they achieved that, but they're going even bigger this year. They have included the urban centre as its gardens, covering a total of 545 hectares, so it's a lot of green. And in the future, they're even hoping to design the whole of Sunshan into a full-scale ecological garden city.
Wow, so they've got some ambitious plans going ahead as well, it seems. Okay, so what can people attending this year expect to do and see?
Well, the focus this year is on more green and less distractions. So they've hidden a lot of concrete-looking areas and they've covered the road and the footpaths with grass and flowers. So as you're walking around the city, it's actually just like being in a huge garden.
Wow.
And you can really feel that full force of nature around you and take a break, which is nice, you know, when you're surrounded in concrete on a daily basis. And there's going to be a lot of beautiful sights and aromas to enjoy as well. Also, one of the highlights is the miniature gardens, and that's a first for this year, with designs based on 44 countries. So that'll give you a taste of travel without having to go too far.
Okay.
And there's going to be some wellness programs as well that you can enjoy. So there'll be things like yoga and meditation and even stuff to include your pets. And this year, there's also a new mode of transportation, which is beautifully named the Garden Dream Cruise. And that just makes me want to go there for the name alone.
Yes, that seems like there's lots to do. And as you said, it sounds like a great place to visit if you want to get away from concrete city life. So then when will the event be running from and how can people get there?
Well, it's starting tomorrow, but there's plenty of time to visit because the expo will continue until October 31st. So you could even go to experience all the different seasons between now and then. You'd fit three nice seasons in.
Sure.
And it's in South Jola province, so you could drive or you could go by bus or train. I think from Seoul, the train is probably the fastest. It takes about 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Yes, and for more information, check out tomorrow's Courier Herald. Let's move on to our second story. What do you have for us?
Well, it's a story from Lee Kyu-ri of the Korea Times about young entrepreneurs turning waste into a trendy new dish soap.
Okay, that sounds cool. What is the waste that they are repurposing?
Well, it's oysters. Do you eat oysters yourself?
Yes, I do, of course. They're a very popular dish in Korea.
Extremely popular. You can find them in soup, rice, and I've even seen them in pasta here as well. And they're also eaten deep fried and raw as well. So you can imagine it leaves a lot of shells over as waste. In fact, there's actually hundreds of thousands of tons of oyster shells ending up as waste each year here.
Right, so it's the shells that are being repurposed then for this dish soap. So some of that's being repurposed then, as you said.
Yeah, so it's not affecting your food. You'll still get as much oysters
exactly,
as you
yes.
want. It's going to be set up by three young women who came up with the idea for an upcycling startup called O Soap. And the oyster shells are one of the main components to their soap-based product. They said oyster shells are actually made up of 90% calcium carbonate powder, which makes a perfect natural ingredient for dish soap.
Mm.
And it's their first product, but they are aiming big for the future with a focus on more upcycling and being eco-friendly as well.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating idea and a great story to check out in tomorrow's Korea Times. That's where we're going to wrap it up for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for those stories and we'll see you again next time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And that wraps up our show today. Now, tomorrow, it is our regular monthly break. So instead of Korea 24, we'll be re-airing KBS World Radio's 2017 Radio Day special called Records of Modern Korean History, celebrating the 90-year history of radio in Korea. So you'll be able to catch that tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll be back on Monday, so we hope you join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.
KBS World Radio strives to promptly update our listeners on safety procedures during emergency situations. The following are recommended guidelines to follow in case of high levels of fine dust. Before going outside, check the air quality by visiting online resources or checking your local weather forecast. When the level of fine dust is high, avoid outdoor activities such as hiking, biking or field sports. Wear protective gear such as masks, glasses and hats. Close your windows, doors and dry your laundry inside. Wash your face often and make sure to also blow your nose regularly. If you have to leave your home, try to use public transportation in order to reduce air pollution. Take a shower after returning home to avoid skin irritation and rinse your sinuses if possible. Before preparing food, wash your hands and make sure to wash fruit and vegetables thoroughly before eating them. Please check our website at world.kbs.co.kr for up-to-date information and procedures.
KBS World Radio.